As a longtime educator, wellness instructor, and coach for women rebuilding after major life shifts, I deeply understand the challenges of reconnecting with your mind, body, and purpose so you can live grounded, confident, and whole. I'm Dr. Molly Kirby, your host, and welcome to Rooted Conversations by Reinnovate You Coaching, where your healing becomes your roots and your growth becomes your new way of being. Through grounding conversations, practical tools, and valuable insights, Rooted Conversations empowers you to reconnect with yourself, to release what no longer serves you, and to reinnovate the person you're becoming. If this sounds just like the thing you've been looking for, subscribe to the podcast and join me on this journey to reset, renew, and reinnovate you. Welcome back to Rooted Conversations. This is a special episode recognizing June as Myasthenia Gravis Awareness Month, or MG. I'm joined by my dear friend, Marilyn Gardner, who not only has a lived experience, but also her wisdom, resilience, and her voice will be added to this conversation. Myasthenia gravis, or MG, is a chronic autoimmune neuromuscular disease that many people don't fully understand. Marilyn has walked this journey with courage and honesty, and she's here to help us better understand what it means to live with an autoimmune disease, both the challenges and the unexpected moments of grace along the way. Marilyn, I'm so honored to have you here today.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here and an honor to have been invited. Thank you.
We've been friends for a really long time, but I'd like for our listeners to know a little bit about you and maybe how and when you were diagnosed with MG, if you want to give us some information about that.
Sure. First of all, I want to say I feel like I'm one of the most blessed people in the world because I have a story that's vastly different than most people who are eventually diagnosed with myasthenia gravis. Back in the late 90s, I was working on my dissertation, going through a divorce, and had just gotten my period and went in for an eye exam because I thought I needed glasses. And a student who was doing my eye exam noticed my eyes fatiguing and had nystagmus, or my eye was wiggling. And pretty soon, every student in the clinic and the preceptors were in there watching my eyes do a little magic trick. They referred me to a neuro-ophthalmologist. And because of my insurance, I had to go through my primary care first. And instead of getting glasses, I ended up with a diagnosis of myasthenia gravis because the type that I have, I'm an ACHR positive type. There was a simple blood test, and I was diagnosed that way. Unfortunately, most women go through years of knowing something's wrong, but not being heard and not being tested for MG because the symptoms mimic so many other things. You know, for me, had that student not just finished a neuro-ophthalmology chapter and noticed what was happening with my eyes, I would have ended up with a much different story, likely.
So other than that, you were asymptomatic at the time?
I say I was, but, you know, I wasn't. I mean, for years I'd been struggling with fatigue, but, you know, I had small children. I was, you know, doing what most women do in their 30s, which is too much. Taking care of everybody else. And so there was always a reason why, you know, it could be this fatigue. Looking back, there were signs that I had MG that just were never explored. After an immunization, I had facial drooping on one side and, you know, it looked like Bell's palsy, but it was just, an immune response, which is fairly typical for me, at least. My body reacted in an MG way, and but it wasn't noticed. It was just written off as, you know, you got better, you're fine. So when I became symptomatic, severely symptomatic years later, I was already established with a good neurologist. I was very lucky to have access to a nationally renowned MG specialist at a clinic about an hour away from here. So when I had my first crisis, my myasthenic crisis, I knew what was happening and was able to get in and get quick care.
So is this more common in women than it is in men?
In the earlier years, yes. So women tend to get MG earlier in their 20s to 40s and live with it throughout their lives. And men tend to get it in their 50s and 70s. And the symptomology is a little bit different, but I'm not sure if it's, women being not heard symptomology or true symptomology. But women, there seems to be a lot more fatigue and quality of life issues. And when it hits men, it hits them hard, usually generalized fatigue. And so I guess I should say that myasthenia gravis affects your muscles. And so there's a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine that is released when your muscles start to move. And myasthenia gravis, the type I have, the ACHR positive, my body produces antibodies against that neurotransmitter and says no, and blocks the neuromuscular junction so that my muscles stop working. So the more I move, the weaker my muscles become. And the analogy I like to give, it's like when you're walking through water, you know, you can still walk, but it's harder. And then if you're walking upstream and there's a current, it becomes harder and harder until you can't walk. And it's sort of like that. Your muscles just don't work as well because they're not getting the neurotransmitter that's needed to make them work. And when it affects your respiratory muscles, then you go into what's called a myasthenic crisis. And the scariest part about that is that all of the markers that they look for when you're in respiratory crisis, like blood gas, blood oxygen levels, remain normal till you crash. But you feel like you're suffocating. It's like you can't get air in.
Yeah, so all of these symptoms that you have, do they get worse when you get older when they're compounded by things like menopause and just natural aging processes? Usually our immune system isn't as strong when we get older. So are these things worse with MG as you get older?
For some, yes. For some, no. Oddly, in pregnancy, about a third of women do better, a third of women do worse, a third remain the same. For me, hormones triggered symptoms. So going through menopause, which I completely missed because I was doing a whole bunch of treatments for my MG, it helped things because I wasn't getting those hormonal fluctuations. So it helped me in that I wasn't getting the peaks and the valleys as much. It was more predictable.
So you mentioned treatments. What kind of treatments are there for MG if someone has been diagnosed with it?
Sure. There's a ton of different types of therapies. The first thing that people are typically put on is a drug called Mestinon. It has a really long chemical name, but it basically allows acetylcholine to remain in the neuromuscular junction longer for uptake instead of dissipating more quickly. For a lot of people, that's all that they need. For other people, immunosuppressants are common, steroids, all the way up to infused chemotherapy. And then there's something called IVIG, which is where they flood your body with basically the plasma of about 10,000 different donors so that your immune system is distracted. And something called plasmapheresis, which they take your I used to call it my oil change. You go in and your blood is removed and they spin off the plasma, which is where the antibodies live, and they reconstitute it and put it back, your red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets, put it back in your body. And those were all very temporary fixes. And there are new biologics out, and they are targeted immunomodulators. So they still have a little bit of an immunosuppressant quality, but it's more like instead of turning a switch off, it's lowering the volume. So you don't have the same general side effects as you do with just regular immunosuppressants. It's more targeted. And that's what I'm on, and it's been life-altering for me.
That's good to hear. So let's shift gears just a little bit. One of the problems that we have in our culture is recognizing that people need accommodations for things like autoimmune diseases. It's often that silent, invisible. If you can't see it, then it doesn't exist. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the roadblocks you've had to deal with and just the cultural misunderstanding of people with autoimmune diseases?
Not everybody has the luxury of having that single blood test that verified that, yes, I indeed I do have this disease. People don't recognize what they can't see. Symptoms tend to get diminished. You know, oh, I have fatigue too. I mean, everybody gets tired, you know, and it's the difference between, you know, it's, yeah, we all get tired and we all get fatigued sometimes, but this is bone crushing fatigue to where, you know, you decide whether or not you're going to take a shower or go to a meeting. And because the symptoms fluctuate, you might see me in the morning and I'm fine. And by 2 PM, I don't even look like the same person. That's really hard for people to understand. I during an accommodation process, was asked to give a 2-day notice before I went into crisis. wish I had that crystal ball. I would like that as well. But you never know. You never know what your day is going to be like. And on top of that, you're usually struggling with trying to, you know, your identity. This is the one disease where you don't push through. You know, you push through and you end up intubated. And once was enough for me. And it's my goal has always been to avoid that. But, it's really hard. You have to set boundaries with yourself, you know, and make peace with the fact that this is life, you know,
Yeah, and I can imagine that setting boundaries with other people is important as well, to let people know.
It is, but people aren't going to understand. And, you know, that's the sad part about it. You know, getting involved with a community of people who do have it and who are dealing with it is always very helpful. But the accommodation process, you know, you don't know, you know, the disease changes. And it's, again, very hard for people to understand.
Yeah. And I know that you've had different issues with MG as it went on, like hearing loss and some of those other things. And I know those are things that people just 100% don't understand a lot of times.
Well, and truly, because it's a rare disease, they're learning more and more. When I first was diagnosed, and I would notice that my symptoms were worse when I was having PMS, that wasn't a thing, that wasn't recognized as being a contributor. Now it is. Same way with hearing loss. Hearing loss, you know, where it was like two different things, but now they know hearing loss is associated, urinary incontinence. All of these things that were once thought to be comorbidities are now, they're looking at them and saying, oh, you know, the epidemiological data suggests that, yeah, they are related. They may not know how exactly, but they're finding more things. And so, you know, I'm always thankful for the physicians who are out there doing and researchers doing research on what it's really like to live with MG. One of my big, pet peeves is that a lot of the literature says, oh, you can live a normal life. I'm like, huh. And, you know, I know you knew me when I had the lines coming out of my chest for several years. There's nothing normal about that. There's nothing normal about having to plan out your day in such a way that you don't end up having to spend 3 days to recover from going out to dinner with friends.
I know you talked a little bit just now about how you, sometimes connecting the dots from symptoms. It's like you think that you have this and they're all separate. But if you put them together, eventually you find out that there is an autoimmune disease or something else going on and these things exist together. If somebody thinks that they might have an autoimmune disease or MG, what should they do first?
Find a good primary care who will listen to you and who will help you find an answer and not just referring you out to people and then being done, but to really connect the dots. And I would like to say that my primary care had thought for years that I had something autoimmune going on and just didn't know what it was. So she was thrilled when I got the diagnosis because she knew there was something going on. But that's the biggest. And then be an advocate. Don't be afraid of offending a physician. Don't be afraid of saying, yes, it, you know, in most cases you hear hooves, it's horses, but sometimes they are zebras. Or plaid zebras like I have behind me. and just be, it's hard though. It's hard advocating for yourself and in those types of situations. And medical gaslighting is a real thing.
So speaking of advocacy, why is June so important? And why is MG awareness so important to you and everyone else that has MG?
It's just important because it's something that you don't hear about. It's a rare disease. And again, it affects women more than men. And a lot of times rare diseases just they fly under the radar. They don't get the kind of funding that they need to make great progress. You know, I'm, again, fortunate that I have one that is pretty well understood. At least the type of MG that I have is fairly well understood. And if somebody gets diagnosed early and before they get intubated, you know, a myasthenic crisis kills you sometimes. You know, early diagnosing early so that you get on treatment to avoid that and to learn what to do to help yourself and to help the people that you love who have it, you know, upstream, you know, issues, fixing those first so that you can live a better quality of life and a longer life.
Marilyn, I so appreciate you coming on and talking about MG Awareness Month and your story and your journey through this autoimmune disease. As for our listeners out there, as always, stay connected, stay grounded. Until next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining Rooted Conversations by Reinnovate You Coaching and for seeking clarity and truth in your health and wellness journey. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review. It helps us grow and reach more listeners like you. For resources and updates, follow us on social media or visit riucoaching.com. Until next time, stay grounded, stay curious, and keep growing. As a reminder, this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical advice. I am not a medical provider. I am a PhD, not an MD. And nothing in these conversations should be used to diagnose, treat, or replace care from a qualified healthcare professional. Always consult your doctor or trusted healthcare provider regarding any questions or concerns about your health.